Riese und Müller Unplugged. The podcast for everything that gets us in motion.
Hello and welcome to a new episode in our podcast Riese und Müller Unplugged. My name is Julia Jankowski and on this channel we are talking to people working for and working with Riese and Müller and their way of working. So we will disclose some back-end stories today because we have the founders right here in our studio, the founder of Riese Müller, Markus Riese and Heiko Müller. I'm really, really glad to have you here and hello.
Hi, Julia.
So it's already late in the afternoon. And what have you moved till now today,
Markus? So I've moved with my load and that's my daily commuter. And since I'm using the load, I've doing all distance up to 30 kilometers on my e-bike. And so that's naturally I moved this today.
So you don't use any car in daily life routine as a daily life routine?
I still have a VW camper, but since I have this load, I've got some issues with the brake, disc brakes, they get rust, like all you've only get sometimes with your old timer. And it's surprising how rare I'm using the car since I have my fast load where I can do everything around.
So for many people, it's just the other way around. So they have like these issues with their bicycle as they don't use it so often, but you have it with your car and your bike is your daily commuter, as you said. And Heiko, what about you? So what have you done till now, till our interview? What have you moved already?
Well, I'm just coming from the office and I had some meetings with our managers for different functions of the company and I have my sure fixes every day with all the managers and checking what's going on. Are there any difficulties, any new topics to discuss and so on. So that's my daily business. I'm still very much in this daily operation. So yeah, I'm regularly talking to all the guys who are responsible for the different functions of the company. And this is what I did today already.
So it sounds like a really structured and scheduled day. And Markus, when you enter the company in the morning, so what is your first thought, your first idea when you come into Riese & Müller? Is it very different from when you remember maybe like 20 years ago or so on?
It's not so much different because when I'm entering the company, the first door I'm opening is the door of our R&D department. And immediately I'm focused on the technical details of future products, future projects. And it's still something what drives me and what it's my ambition to do it with products which have new solutions for daily problems. And still a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is like the connection between the two of you. So how did you get in touch? How did you get to know each other? And how did you find out that you have the same like passion, Heiko?
Yeah, well, we have studied mechanical engineering at the university in Darmstadt. And already on our first day there, we met each other. And we had similar hobbies. And one of these hobbies was definitely doing everything with a bike. So we were checking our bikes, optimizing parts and stuff. And we were also riding the bike all day long and doing mountain bike races, touring, everything what you can do with a bike. And basically in 1990, 3 years after we met, we did a big tour through Tunisia. And we've been 4 weeks on tour and we had a lot of time to think about our future. And our idea was that we will not going to enter one of these big car companies like Mercedes and Porsche, like all the other guys who were studying together with us. We thought, okay, our passion is bike and we want to do something with this passion. We want to work with our passion design bicycles, whatever. And this is what we want to do in the future. It was not very concrete at these days, but anyhow, 2 years later, Markus came with a suitcase to me, a very old suitcase. And I said, Markus, what are you doing with this suitcase? And he opened it and he built a prototype made out of paper, carton paper. And it was a prototype of our folding bike, Birdie. And the folding principle was just exactly like it was later in our final Birdie, which we brought on the market later. And he unfolded this and showed me, and I said, "Oh, that's interesting. Let's go for it. Let's build a prototype." And we immediately started to take all old bikes, cutted tubes, welded new constructions, and try to build a prototype of this Birdie. And the special thing was it was full suspended. And we as mechanical engineers or coming mechanical engineers, we knew, especially if you have small tires, you need a suspension to have a nice and smooth riding on the street, even on a rough road. So we made the first prototype, and it was, yeah, it worked actually. It mm-hmm. was really nice to ride this bike already. So we decided, because our studies at the university came to their end, and we had to decide what should we do. Should we go to a big company, or should we stay on our passion? And we decided, okay, let's book a small booth on the Eurobike, which is a mm-hmm. bicycle show. So in 1993, we booked that little booth, 10 square meters only, on the Eurobike, and we have shown this first prototype. And it was interesting because many people already came and said, "Oh, that looks interesting. And how much is it? When are you able to build it? When will this bike be delivered?" And so on. So we thought, okay, that sounds not too bad. Let's stay on that project. And for the next year, we optimized our construction and the prototype, and we were looking for producers in Germany and other countries of Europe. But it was a kind of difficult because nobody really wanted to build this bicycle. And then 1 year later, 1994, on the same Eurobike, we were standing with our bike again. And then a Taiwanese guy called George Lin from the company Pacific Cycles in Taiwan came to our booth, and he looked on this folding bike on the wall, and then he said, "Guys, I want to build this bicycle."
Mm-hmm. So that was all in all, like, it sounds like 2 years from the suitcase to what was his name again? The name of the guy?
George Lin.
George Lin. Okay. Right. But you still work together with George Lin, as you told me beforehand.
We still work together with this company. Now the son of George has taken over the company. But anyhow, we are still working together with Pacific Cycles.
You're still in touch. So, Markus, have you kept this all secret, the suitcase, beforehand? So was it like your own idea which you were carrying along, or have you shared your thoughts with Heiko beforehand, or what was the procedure, the journey of the invention? Yeah.
So since I was very young, I already worked with bicycles. First, I was only repairing bicycle when I was at primary school. Later, when I was adult, I started to do my own creations with a welding machine for my father. And I had this idea of an foldable bike, which has a nice riding performance, but on the same can easy to fold and small to fold, so that you can carry it on the train into the car. So that I had in mind already for a long mm-hmm. time, and it took several years and many ideas until to come to an idea of the Birdie, where I thought, okay, this is now the point where it's really important steps ahead of what exists on the market, what much better than all my ideas I had before. And so I presented it to Heiko, and it was surprising. He understood it immediately and was really catched by the idea that we should bring this to the market. And so the adventure begins.
And is it always like this, that Heiko agrees in your ideas, or do you sometimes differ between your ideas and thoughts on?
It's for sure. It's not that we are not twins.
mental twins.
mental twins. No, but it's. I think the basis is right, and it's for sure. It's if I have an idea and I can share it and exchange it with Heiko, it's either the idea is good and he agrees, and then it's good proof. Or otherwise, he's not agreeing, and then it's nice to have an exchange and to bring it to another level. It's like this philosophic process of synthese, antithese, and syntheses.
So, yeah, sounds like a founding tale. And from the moment of having the suitcase again and going to the Eurobike, you had to produce it. I think you occupied the garage of your parents. Is it correct, Heiko?
In the beginning, yes. For the first prototypes, we occupied the garage, and we were welding all night through to finish the first prototypes. As Marco said, especially if we don't have the same ideas, then it's usually coming to a good point. That's the good thing. So always in these 28 years of our company, we found good solutions by discussing even different standpoints, and this always came to good final result.
And solution, it sounds like a perfect co-creation, what you're practicing. And to my ears, sounds like there's everything you need for being an entrepreneur. You have the strength, the willingness to do it, to the passion, a good idea. But there's one thing missing, and I'm sure this was missing for you too, because you were students. So what about money? I mean, how did you get accomplished your project? I mean, you need a lot of money.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when the Birdie was ready for the market, ready to produce, George Lynn produced three containers of Birdies. One container went to Japan to a customer which was looking for a folding bike like that, and the second container went to the USA, and the third container with 250 completely assembled bikes came to us. So we bought 250 bikes, and of course we had to pay these bikes in advance, and even we already had customers for nearly all of these bikes. The banks, of course, wanted to have a guarantee for the credit we needed to buy these bicycles, and they wouldn't just give us this credit without any guarantee. So we had to ask our parents to give us this guarantee on their houses where they lived, and it was guarantee of 100,000 German marks for each of us, which was a lot of money during these days, and also for our parents. So finally our parents gave us this guarantee, and the bank gave us the credit, but there was no option to fail, because otherwise our parents would have a big problem. We actually knew there's no way back. We have to go on this road, and we have to be successful. And that pushed us, of course.
Forced to be successful. So under pressure, how did you deal with that, Marcos? To be under this extreme pressure? Or didn't you feel like it? I mean,
if you're young, you're always more able to, or you're more easily taking risks than if you're older and you've seen what all went wrong, and that was the advantage. And it was also the case that we've been students, we didn't have families who needed money. We didn't had an expensive lifestyle. So we, our parents had been able to support us on the same student level at the beginning, and we lived nearly with no money or eating at the parent places. and we are really worked 80 hours in the weeks. So it was, we always was just focused on the next to-dos, but never were thinking of how it would happen if it would all fail. And the big thing was, or the good thing was, that we had this diploma as a mechanical engineer. And we always had in mind, if this will fail, we can start a traditional working life in a car industry and would earn enough money to pay our debt we created at our mm-hmm. parents' place. So that was not a nice thinking of knowing that you have to work five years until you are back to zero. But but it's you can do it if you're young.
Yeah, the risk is definitely different to running your own company, supporting a family and so on. So that was a different starting point for you. But still, sometimes it might be a fallback option, might be some like a mental release for people, yeah, to start and think big. At this point, when you look back, Markus, could you have imagined that something like Riesemüller nowadays will arise from this idea, from this suitcase?
No, that was not my thinking at this time. I haven't in mind. The idea was only to bring this product to life, to have this creation. It's like an artist. He's only wants to do the work, but he's not thinking of I would get famous out of that. So
yeah. Rich and famous.
Yeah. So that was never the thinking, and that would be the problem if we had this thinking, because the first years were quite tough. And if you would had in mind to earn money and to get, then you would end up very early. So after some years, you will notice that you don't have earned any money, and you will ask yourself who's to blame, and then you will not continue this. And this, the reason why it was successful, it was based on our passion for the bicycle and on our passion to bring these visions to life. Mm-hmm. And so the earning was not the money. The earning was that we've seen the product, that we've seen that other people bought our products. That was something really at the very beginning. It was so such a nice moment. If you see some unknown person on your product, it was like the best thing what you ever could happen to you. And so that had been the moments which give us the strength and the power to continue.
Yeah. A real customer.
Yeah. He didn't bought it because he knows me. He bought it because he was convinced that it's a better product. And I mean, what better can happen to you?
That's perfect feedback.
Yes.
And when you talk to young people, to students, Heiko, when they think about being an entrepreneur, what do you tell them? Is it the same message like Marco said? What is your advice for people?
Well, first you need a passion. If you don't have a passion, you just shouldn't do it. If you just think, okay, let's found a company, and you're all already thinking of the exit and how to make a lot of money, I think that's not a good start in my mind. I think you should have a passion, and you should really work on that passion, and you should have a good idea, something different to all the other products on the market, and then just go for it. That's my advice. And I think if the idea is good, and if you have enough passion, then you have quite good chances to get successful in the end.
So it's not about building the next unicorn, not in each case.
Not in each case, no.
Looking at the history of your company, there were some groundbreaking decisions. For example, the decision to focus on e-bikes. I think it was in 2012 or so, Markus. What about this decision? How did you come to this conclusion to focus mainly on e-bikes?
So for us, it was a logical next step because we started our business with the Birdie because we wanted to shaping the mobility of the future by adding another missing link in the mobility. It means the Birdie gives you the chance to have your bicycle on you, even if you're using the train or if somebody gives you a ride with a car, you can take your Birdie and doing this in between distances on the Birdie. And the electric assistance on the bicycles are adding also another function to the bicycle, which brings the bicycle to another level of as a mobility device. And so no matter if you have to carry something heavy, if you want to increase your distances because you can ride faster on a speed e-bike, if you're having a topo in a hilly area where you have to do some altitudes, no matter, it always adds you another power on your bike, which gives you the chance to do it better and which makes more fun to do it. And so it was for us the logical consequence that if you doing cycling as an, if you see cycling as a mobility substitution of the car, then the electric assistance will getting much more important than it was in the year 2012. So we'd been convinced that this will be the future. But I know that at this time the perception was different, and many people were surprised because in their understanding it was still a product only for old people, for old or handicapped people. And in our eyes, we always had this vision that the motor will add you another level, a value on this product for another function. Mm.
So this sounds pretty clear from a technical point of view, but what about the market? How did they react? I mean, how did your dealers react? Were they pleased? Were they happy with your decision? Or what was the main reaction?
Well, first of all, we had to convince our employees because they said, now these guys are getting crazy, just giving away 50% of our sales might be not a good idea, but... yeah, on the other hand, we were sure we have to focus on the future and not stick on products which we have done before. And well, our customers, especially the bike shops who are selling our products, they were not all convinced from our idea. A lot of them were still focused on standard bicycles without electricity, and they said, well, if you are not offering normal bikes anymore, we will not be able to buy anything from you. And then we said, okay, maybe you should think about your portfolio in the future. And now in the retrospective, of course, it sounds very logical to focus on e-bikes. But during these days, it was a very clear decision. But for a lot of people, it was not so so logical as it was for us. But from this day on, we had quite a good success. We were growing for 40% every year in average in sold bikes. And this is still going on nowadays. So for us, of course, it was exactly the right decision.
So in the retrospective, as you told, it looks really easy, but it was not that easy when you were in this decision. I mean, is it very typical for Riese and Müller being brave, being very strategic, very visionary?
I think it was our root of our company, and I think it's what we also kept till nowadays, that we are thinking more in visions, in seeing a target far away where we think we want to go and where we think how this product could be better for convincing people, or not convincing, it's more that people are choosing our e-bike instead of the car because it makes us, is such a better solution. It makes more fun, it's faster, it needs less stress in the daily business. So and I think it's an advantage that we are not an shareholder company where we have to focus only on the on each year and need that our ideas and products have to be successful in just 1 year or 2 or 3 years. We can think on products which will be maybe only successful in 5 or 10 years. And so I think that's something important if you want to do not a mainstream, if you want to do innovation and having new concepts.
So that's a real mission statement to enrich people's life. And you mentioned a woman before. She said that her load is even more important than the dishwasher. That is a nice story.
Yes. So so she's living in the old downtown of Darmstadt, where it's no parking spaces are available. She was a mother of kids, and so there was always these difficulties to do the shopping and then bringing the sleeping kids and the shopping upstairs. And but the car, there's no parking space around, and she has to leave the car alone with the kids or the shopping alone. So it was not, the solution was not, there was no solution for that. Only with our bicycle, she's then makes it so much easier that she was saying that after the washing machine, it's the important device of her life that makes her life convenient.
Yeah. What a great feedback. What could you wish more? So Heiko, talking future, we mentioned the keyword before, shifting from being a bike company to a mobility player. What would be the next steps for you to fulfill?
Well, I mean, there are many steps on this path, but from the very beginning on with our folding bike, we already were thinking in the category of mobility and not of a bike maker. And now with our e-bikes, it's more obvious that that we want to organize the mobility of the future. We want to shape the mobility of the future and want to play an important part in this game. And that's our vision. And for example, digitalization is a keyword or a key point in this game, because in the beginning we started to digitalize all parts of our company, which means from the supply chain to the production, getting all the parts to the people who are assembling the bikes and so on. This was, of course, all digitalized in the very beginning, but now the idea is that every bike is connected, which means we have a chip in the bike, which you can it's like a GPS device, so you can always locate your bike. And for example, if the bike is stolen, you have the chance to locate the position of the bike and get it back. And of course, there are much more services around that. You can have you can actually track whether you are you're getting off the bike during an accident. You can of course navigate your bike and all that stuff. So I think a connected bike is something which will be a very important part of the future, because everything is getting connected, from your fridge to of course to everything at home during the corona times. When you have been sitting in the home office, your laptop was the connection to the world, and the bicycle will also be the connection to the world in the future. And this is definitely a big step which we are going now.
That's nearly a conclusion. And Markus, what else will we see in terms of bike features, future bike features? What will make bike riding even more convenient and more innovative?
Yeah, so for us, it's not the bicycle industry is the benchmark. For us, it's the automotive industry, and also the car is the benchmark. And if you see what is concerning reliability, weather protection, also on distances you can travel or things you can carry. So there's still a lot of things to do better than if you see the old days bicycle. And already now, if you see that we are offering ABS, that we have suspension, that we have high and low beam, that we have brake light, that's only one step, and we will still work on these things, to keeping the bicycle more clean, to make it safer, and to make it more convenient. And I think it's really interesting to see what we will present the coming time. Mm-hmm.
So, and what will be the next personal project for you to pursue?
So it's top secret. All the.
A top secret innovation. Yeah.
Yes. So it's, but I can assure that it's really exciting what we will bring.
So we will have to keep our eyes open for something really big and innovative deriving from.
Yes, I think it's really nice to see that we are not by far not on an. Developing where we think now it's getting boring. They will, the coming years will be staying the same, the product. It's just coming up the pace, and it's because also the user is using it more and in bigger variety. That offers also the chance to and develop more specific and with more effort. And I think so that's makes it exciting.
And I think your customers are already getting used to being prepared that you always come up with new ideas in the market. So, and turning my head to you, Heiko, what is your next project? Maybe you can spoil it a little bit.
Product-wise, you mean? Yeah. Well, my vision is that the idea of the Vespa scooter from the 60s will be transferred to an e-bike. This very easy use, which you have on a scooter, you can just jump on, everybody can go for it. There's not much to adjust or nothing to adjust, actually. You can just go for shorter or longer distances. This idea is my vision to have that on a bike, on an e-bike for families, for communities, whatever. I think we already went quite a long way. If you compare the e-bikes from today with the e-bikes from the very beginning, it's a big difference. In the beginning, you just had a bike, a standard bicycle, and then the motor and the battery was just adapted on this bike, and now it's much more integrated. You have integrated batteries. The motor is very much integrated in the whole frame concept. You can hardly even see that it's an e-bike. But I think this is still a way to go, that the e-bike will be even more integrated product with a very high design level. So I think in the next years there will be still coming up very interesting, nice products. So I'm always looking forward what's going on, what the future will bring, and I think a lot of really cool products are on the way already.
Yeah. So thank you very much for your personal stories. Thank you, Markus. Thank you, Heiko. And I'm absolutely convinced that the people will love to hear the story, how you found Riese and Müller and your thoughts on the future of mobility. So thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Riese und Müller Unplugged, the podcast for everything that gets us in motion. If you want to hear more, be sure to listen to our other episodes.